Welcome to Spark Stories, where entrepreneurs and experts share their brand story and how they found their spark, the spark that started it all.
Lee Cantor here with Clarissa Sparks. This is, what is it, episode two?
Episode number two.
Of Spark Stories. Clarissa, why don't you tell our listeners what you're trying to do with Spark Stories and maybe they can help get us some guests.
Yes, I would love for you to be my guest on Spark Stories, where entrepreneurs share who they are, what they do, and why it matters. It's an opportunity to tell us how you found Spark and how you continue in this entrepreneurial world.
So who do you got with you today?
Today I have Mr. Joe Norton of Helium Services and Ms. Christy West of Brave Space.
Welcome, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We're going to start off with Mr. Joe Norton. Tell us who you are and what you do and why it matters.
Well, as you said, my name is Joe Norton, and I am the co-founder of Helium Services. We are a custom software design and development shop based right here in Atlanta, Georgia, about a half mile from the studio.
Welcome. We're so excited that you're here. So tell us a little bit about Helium again and just kind of how you found your spark in starting your business.
Sure. So my partner and I, Terrence Jackson, met while working at a boutique consulting firm doing retail analytics, which is a mouthful of a way to say we did a lot of reporting for very large companies inside of places like Walmart and Target. And over the years, we found we worked really well together and were able to come up with some pretty cool solutions to complex problems. And along the way, we realized that we maybe should start something on our own. Over a couple of months of conversation, it turned out it was the right move for us. And we sort of just took the leap, left the jobs behind, and jumped into a new path.
That's pretty brave. So what was that? How long did you take the jump? How long ago?
Just under 3 years ago, we were a little nervous about it, of course, like anyone else would be. But we knew if we took the path of, sort of putting our why first and putting together, our goals, which were solving complex problems, building success stories with other companies and people and enjoying the work, that it would eventually pay off. Mm-hmm. And it seems like, this year seems to be sort of the turning point, and we've grown to a larger team, and we love our team, and we're so proud of them, and we're looking forward to what 19 brings.
Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome. You said something very important, starting with your why. Can you go a little bit deeper with that and tell them what's the importance of knowing your why?
Sure. And of course, I mean, sometimes you stray away from it, but the concept of being what it is that really drives you and really why you want to do this. You know, paycheck's great, and we had great paychecks, but we walked away from them. The business we were working at was starting to drift toward what we considered unethical behavior. And one of our big whys is doing something we're proud of and having integrity in everything we do. Mm-hmm. So that was a big enough why to leave. And in starting Helium, we knew that there was no way we'd move forward without the first pillar being integrity. And having that as a driver, I think was huge for us. And, you know, we want to enjoy our work. We only have so many years on this earth. Mm-hmm. And we really want to spend time working with folks that want to build, true success stories, that want to, do it with integrity and have fun along the way. So that was sort of our big why. And I don't think we knew that was our why when we started. But over time we've really sort of centered in on that concept, and we're trying to push that throughout the everything we do every day.
Okay. So knowing your why and having those very strong brand values based sure. on your company, what is something, I guess, that again connects back to the love and to the drive of the business?
I think one of the things is building success stories. Mm-hmm. We now have a system that we're excited that we've implemented. When a client or a potential client comes to us, the first thing we do is get to know them and understand their problem. And then we come back and we cast a vote to determine if we want to work on this project and if we want to work with this client. Money's great. You know, this is a project might be neat, but if it's not the right folks that fit our values, so if you're not an integrity person, you're not a good fit for us. Or if it's a project that just doesn't get us excited, then we're not going to bring our A game to it, or at least as high of an A game as we could be if we're excited about it. So one of those things is, you know, enjoy the work. Well, if you're not going to enjoy it, we don't do the work. Mm-hmm. Solving problems. If it's not solving a big problem in a big way, or at least solving, and when I say a big problem, that could be a website for someone who's got a startup. It could be we're working on work with Emory right now. It could be more complex stuff. But if it's not going to build a success story, it doesn't excite us as much. So we want to find stuff that our team will be proud of and excited, and it's going to be fun. So implementing that voting system was a big turning point for us in saying, do we want to do it first? Not, hey, we'll do anything for money.
Okay. That's a really neat idea. Now, do you incorporate the entire team? Is it just you and Terrence, your co-founder?
Well, the team's listening. So now, right now, Terrence and I are typically voting. We pull folks on the team to say, hey, what do you think about this? But that's something that we want to start getting more feedback from them on. We went from 2 to 3 to 10 in a matter of 6 months.
Wow.
So our team scaled up as we brought on bigger projects. And we're still working out those kinks. It's part of the game of this thing. Mm-hmm. But as our team evolves and their strengths in the business grow, then we're going to lean on them more and more. And we, like I said, we have an amazing team, so they'll certainly be part of that soon.
That's awesome. And like you said, in a short span of time, you've grown your team out. What has been one of the biggest challenges of doing that in growth as a leader?
I think it's probably two things. One would be celebrating small victories. As the founder of a company, you work all the time, even when you're not at work. You know, I'm thinking when I'm driving, I'm thinking when I'm waking up in the morning, I think as I fall asleep. And you never stop thinking, which means you never stop working, which means you're probably not celebrating small victories. And if you don't celebrate small victories, you get tired or frustrated or what have you. So one thing is figuring out how to celebrate those small victories, which were, again, a big push of 2019, is just getting out there and saying, guys, let's take an hour off early and just go celebrate this project being finished or what have you. I'd say that's probably the biggest piece for us.
The biggest piece. That's good. So if you had to offer some advice to someone who was thinking about leaving their existing organization to start their own, what would that be?
I would say if I could do it all over, I would define my why. Mm-hmm. And know why I'm doing it. And I think that's the biggest step. And the second thing I might encourage them to do is maybe try it in phases, right? Like Terrence and I fortunately jumped into it, and we never missed a paycheck. They weren't very big in the beginning, and we're still working on growing them. But maybe make sure that side, you know, maybe start with that side hustle. Mm-hmm. But I mean, ultimately, if it doesn't keep you up at night, maybe I'll take a step back. I would say if it keeps you up at night and you can't stop thinking about it for months, do it. Mm-hmm. If you're not sure, start with a side hustle and sort of build into that. But once you get that sort of fever for it, it doesn't go away. So if you have that feeling in your heart, then, you know, do what's best and go for it.
Cool. So what made you want to, why did you choose the career path of, web development and services? What's your background?
I don't know if I chose it. So I had no background in web development. I went to school and came out and got a job for Hewlett Packard. Worked there for just under a year, and it was very corporate all of the time. And it turns out that was not a great fit for me. Mm-hmm. So left that and then ended up working for the retail analytics firm. Spent quite a few awesome years there. Got a chance to really hone my skills in targeted solutions-driven thinking, as well as working on a very dynamic team that kind of is maybe smaller but can do big things and mm-hmm. do them faster and better. And over time, I got to try my hand at a few sort of internal startups, if you will. Mm-hmm. So we had ideas, and I got to come up with ideas, pursue ideas, and implement ideas over a few years. And that was huge. And the way that we landed there, like I said, when Terrence and I decided to take the leap, we knew we could help a lot of people. So we sort of just jumped into it. And I couldn't do a lick of any web development. Zero. It was all Terrence on the dev side. And it was all me on going to find the folks and seeing if they wanted to spend some time with us and also hopefully spend a little money with us. so that's really how we landed there. If you had asked me about web development 10 years ago, I'd ask you what it was.
Understood.
But like most things in my life, I think they've largely come to me, and it's just a matter of jumping on the opportunity when it comes.
Okay. So it sounds like a strong aspect of your business model is collaboration and team building. How has that helped in being successful in where you are now?
I do think we had a leg up, Terrence and I, having, you know, we got a long trial run together. We got years together, working on projects, at our career together. So when we stepped out, it wasn't, oh, how do we do this? Or how do we communicate that? I mean, there's times where we can have a conversation just by sort of glances back and forth across the room. We know what's going on. Mm-hmm. So I think we were able to build that team, connection, even just the two of us to start. And I think our team, like I said, it's grown fast, and that's part of what this year is about is, we have a great team. Can we be better about certain things in terms of, making them feel appreciated and making sure that everyone on the team is being heard and connecting and people get to cross functionally work with one another? Yes, we can. And that's what this year is about. So I think that's one of the pieces of the journey is building the right team. And it can be hard. Sometimes folks don't make it on the team, and sometimes you might be missing a piece. You don't realize it till they show up. But that's part of what this year is all about, is refining and finding sort of that ideal team.
All right. Refining. That's really good. It sounds like you work really hard over at Helium.
Now, when you decided to go out on your own, how much thought did you put into kind of, am I going to be target a niche? Am I going to just take work from anybody that's doing interesting work? Was that any consideration?
On day one, yeah, we'd have done anything. So, you know, if you needed something built, we would do it. So web app, iPhone app, Android app, fixing your broken website, sort of you name it, we'd go after it. We had one product in mind, which is a website platform, sort of like Squarespace, but we do all of the work. So day one, you meet with us. We still have this product, by the way. But essentially, you come meet with us, and we'll build you a website for, you know, a low fee, and then there's just a monthly fee to keep it going. You want to make updates, changes, we'll do it for you. So that was our sort of our first product that we came to the market with.
Minimum viable product.
That was our minimum viable product, and fortunately, it's still around today. Have quite a few customers on it, but we had to supplement that with consulting. And over the years, the consulting projects got bigger and more exciting, and we're doing everything from electronic medical record systems to working with Emory to building music player platforms.
So across all industries?
Yeah, across all industries. We've stepped away from some older code bases, not to get boring with folks, but there are some code bases that we just don't get involved with. But again, that comes back to our values of enjoying the work, and our guys don't want to work on COBOL stuff. It's not exciting. Like, you know, we're not the punch card generation. We want to work on cool, exciting new stuff. And that's where our niche has gone. And our niche, we're continuing to carve that groove.
Now, do you have any tips for people who are hiring? Because you grew pretty rapidly.
Like, sure.
Do you do assessments? Do you make them jump through hoops? Do you see how they behave? Like, how do you know if the person is who they say they are?
Sure. We have someone coming in tomorrow. Maybe they're listening. step one is just sit down and chat with us. Because if you're not a good fit, you're not a good fit. No different than our clients. Because you can have the greatest developer in the world, or greatest designer or whoever. But if they're a jerk, then no one wants to work with them, and neither will your clients. So first and foremost, we just want folks that get along with our team and just kind of fit a hardworking but laid back, comfortable, honest, transparent vibe. And that's been really the first step. Step two is, I'll talk about development hiring. Step two is you take a test. So you can be the greatest guy in the world or gal in the world, but if you don't nail our test, it doesn't work. So we want to find A players, and we can find that pretty quickly with testing. And then last, we typically bring folks on through an apprenticeship program. So you come on with us for 3 or 6 months, and you work with the team. And at the end of that, there's an assessment. And if you've sort of ticked all those boxes, then an offer is extended. If not, there may be an opportunity for you elsewhere. But we're trying to get pretty particular about who we hire. But it it can be as much as a 4-month process to join the team full time.
And it's the same philosophy of it's either hell yeah or it's a no.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, that's the for your ideal someone on your team. What about your ideal client?
You know, our ideal client, it's typically a mid-sized company that has a decent understanding of what these budgets cost. I think sometimes, you know, folks look at something and think, oh, they probably built that mobile app for $10,000. Mm-hmm. And that is not possible, at least not to do it the right way. Actually, I'll just go ahead and say it's not possible. So our ideal client is a mid-sized company that is focused on the solution, not just knocking, you know, not just checking boxes. If we're going to do something, we want to do it right, and we want to put our name on it. And we tell the team, you know, imagine whatever work you're doing showing up on a billboard in rush hour and also on the front page of Google. Are you confident in it? And we don't want to push something out that they're not.
Sure.
So it's really about finding folks that want to build solutions, because if you're going to worry about nickel and diming small things and skipping a huge opportunity because of some small piece, well, we try to steer away from that. And we've been fortunate to work with folks that understand that and that see the big picture.
Sure.
So now, if somebody wanted to learn more and have more substantive conversation, what's the best way to find you? What are your website coordinates?
Sure. Our website is heliumservices.com. We're big on the personal touch. The phone number at the bottom is mine. So you will call me directly. We're very big on direct lines of communication with folks.
Well, thank you so much for sharing your story.
Thank you.
Thanks, Joe.
All right, Clarissa, who's next?
Up next, we have Miss Christy West of Brave Space. Hi, Christy.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm doing great.
Good. It's your opportunity to share with the world who you are, what you do, and why it matters.
Okay. Well, I am Christy West, and I am an applied improv facilitator and founder of Brave Space. And I guess my spark?
Yes.
You know, how did I find this? Well, I took an improv class about 20 years ago. And I really thought I was signing up for funny classes. I enjoyed comedy. I enjoyed theater as a child. And really my expectation was I'm going to sign up for this class, maybe get a little funnier, have some fun, make people laugh. And it wasn't long after that I realized I had been tricked. I thought I was signing up for funny classes, and I was actually signing up for a gym membership for my social skills. So I did not end up on SNL with Tina Fey and Amy Poehler. I just stayed in the business world here in Atlanta doing my job. But about 10 years after starting improv classes and performing and training on a regular basis, you know, I was going into this theater every week to train for improv. And they were asking us to do all these kind of crazy things during our rehearsals. And I was like, what does this have to do with being funny? Right. You know, these crazy improv games. And what I realized over time is that the same principles and tenets that they teach you in improv are really just heightened communication skills, listening, focus, empathy, storytelling, putting someone else above yourself. And I started to notice all of these skills spilling over into my professional life and business-to-business sales. I had been working in business-to-business sales in Atlanta for 10-plus years in staffing and recruiting sales and technical recruiting. And I just started to notice that I was turning the corner professionally. My clients would even say, you know, wow, you know, you're so authentic and easy to trust and all the things you want to hear as a salesperson, right?
Right.
And I thought, you know, that my turning point, my spark was, you know, realizing that I didn't just become a great listener. I didn't just start interacting with my clients in ways that they valued. They didn't care about my product knowledge or my PowerPoint skills as much as they cared about how I interacted with them mm-hmm. in ways that they valued. That was my improv training.
Right.
That's the tricked part. They Miyagi'd me. You know, wax on, wax off, don't ask, just trust the process. And that's exactly what I did. So two things happened. I noticed these skills were really valuable outside of the theater, off the stage and into corporate environments. And I started in the technical recruiting world that I was in. You know, I had moved jobs maybe 4 or 5 times working in different dynamics and different cultures. And I looked around one day and I thought, this particular company I was in, by the way, was a very competitive, ego-driven environment. I mean, we were ringing a cowbell every time somebody closed a deal. I mean, I get excited just like the next person about money when you're in sales, right? But it was money-driven, very much what's the word, the movie that came out, sales movie, not the old one, but the new...
Wolf of Wall Street?
The boiler room. Yes, it was like that, right? So I would go to the bathroom and have a panic attack some days if I wasn't... I mean, like, literally, I don't know if it was a panic attack, but I would just stay in there until I could calm down because I wasn't going to meet my numbers that month. So it was very competitive. And I thought, you know, this is no way. And I think Joe even hinted to this in talking about his company, that this can be healthy for anybody. We're not having fun. No one here feels safe to share an idea or a concern because we'll just get shot down. It's all about, it's very money driven. And it just, this can't be the right culture. I knew it wasn't the right culture for me, right?
Right.
And I guess over time I realized that culture and, you know, how you run your business and how you create a climate in your company is very important. And in my opinion, has everything to do with the results, the end of the day results. If people feel safe, can feel like they have a voice, and you've created interpersonal safety, it's huge. And in improv, when you learn to do improv, one of the first things we learn outside of skills like listening and empathy is you can't do anything by yourself. Right. Everything is a collaboration. And your inner critic and your judgment towards yourself or others has to go out the window. There's no time for ego. And I just, my turning point, my spark was like, this work is important.
Right.
And I discovered a whole network of people in an industry called Applied Improv, where people took improv off the stage, out of the theater, and into corporate environments, and used the methodology, the how, not the what, to help people in business do their job, to help teams in business to be more collaborative. It works, it's powerful, and that is my why.
That is your why. So do you bring businesses into your brave space to help facilitate improv?
I do. I mean, the name Brave Space is, you know, I can't say that I own it. You know, I worked for Second City. They have a business arm, too, the famous Second City, the legendary Second City of Chicago. And I worked for their business arm for about a year and a half. And, you know, in conversations with clients and facilitators there, we kept referring to and talking to clients, you know, one of the things we do is create a space where people can practice brave skills that, you know, you have to be vulnerable to do that are hard. We call them soft skills. And if you guys do anything for me today, this year, when someone says soft skills, say, well, you know, they're not really that soft. They're actually very hard to learn. They're not hard skills, but they're difficult. If they were so easy and soft, we would be really good at them. But we typically aren't because we don't practice them enough. So we create a space to practice brave skills that is safe, and we give people permission to play and to be vulnerable, which is hard to do in most corporate environments. Even you said that you didn't know if you did enough with your team to be sure that everyone felt like they had a voice or that everyone collaborated. And it's not that you're doing anything wrong. It's that there has to be a big priority and a conscious move on a leader's part or a company's part to say, I'm going to make time and space to practice these things.
Sure. I think it has to be an active pursuit. And that's our big goal, is to actively pursue that this year.
And you've got it on your list, so I am so proud of you.
Thank you.
The improv lady is proud of you.
Perfect.
So how can Joe use some of those skills with when he's hiring or either vetting his clients?
Well, you know, one of the things he could do is come to my BizProv class.
Oh,
and it starts in February. A great class for leaders, a great class for entrepreneurs who are starting to create a culture of their own, starting to think about how they want the climate and their organizations to be. We have a whole 6-week series where I've taught everything from young entrepreneurs to leaders that have been in business for 20, 30 years who just wanted to get a fresh set of skills. But one of the weeks we cover team development. And in that week, we talk about how to create the right climate for psychological safety, not to throw a crazy word, but it's a buzzword out right now that I've latched onto, because the psychological safety in its simplest form is just creating a climate where people feel safe to express an idea or a concern without being judged. Okay? Sounds easy, right? Well, apparently, we haven't been doing a very good job about that in most corporate environments, because there's books and media about it today. It's a very hot trend, and it's important. And so we have a whole week of that. So something that Joe and a lot of other business leaders can do is, you know, work with somebody. And it, you know, it doesn't have to be me, but hey, while I'm here, but a practitioner like me who focuses on team development, who focuses on bringing teams together. And the reason, you know, you pick somebody might be because you like their methodology better than the other. My methodology happens to be improvisation. I take a lot of the tenets, the techniques, the principles, and I design a program using games and exercises where people are either in pairs or small groups, interacting and practicing things in real time. So the training is very experiential. So people actually feel something in a moment and go, oh, wait a minute. I haven't been a very good listener. I thought I was a good listener, but I'm really not. This exercise proves that I'm not. And I just felt this in real time with my partner. And then we discuss it, and then we continue to kind of practice. I tell people that a lot of what we do is before a workshop, I'll tell everybody, I was like, okay, we're basically going to do a workout on some skills that you probably haven't practiced in a while. So you're going to be sore tomorrow. Because it's just like a workout at the gym. We don't work these things out. When's the last time you worked out your active listening muscle? I mean, like consciously said, I'm going to practice my active listening today.
In this moment. I'm actively listening.
I mean, the point is, it's so important. Right. Like, we love people who listen to us. Am I right?
Yeah, absolutely.
If you have anybody in your life that you go to when you're having a problem or you need somebody to listen, just think about it for a second. There's a reason you go to that person. They pay attention to you. They look at you. They nod their head when you're talking. They repeat what you said. They ask good questions. They're not making it about them or trying to fix it. They're just a good listener. And that takes practice. That's not just natural.
Now, is one of the challenges you have in this kind of work using improv as the methodology is that people think, oh, I'm going to be funny, and there's a pressure.
Yeah.
Like, or they're not taking it as seriously, even though you're using techniques
that I have
comedians use, but they don't necessarily themselves in business. Like, do they in their head think it's one thing and really it?
Every time I get in a workshop and the first thing I ask is who here wants to, you know, talk about improv? You know, what do you think it is? And I get the Tina Fey's and the Steve Carell's and the Whose Line Is It Anyway? And The Office and Parks and Rec. I say, those guys are great, and I am a performer too. I perform for comedy all the time because that is a hobby, and I love it. This is not about being funny, though. This is not about making anybody laugh. The truth is comedy. So the last thing that makes successful improv work is two people who think they're funny. Mm-hmm. Two people who try to be funny, because that is not what ends up being funny. What ends up being funny is two people being real and having a moment together on stage, talking about anything the audience might throw at them in a very real and honest way. That's what ends up being funny. And I have a million analogies I'll throw out to people. It's no different from a basketball game, right? In basketball, if you love basketball and you play basketball, you want to play with somebody else who also knows the game and knows the rules and knows how to play it, because then you can play together and it's fun, right? Improv, whether it's on stage or in a corporate boardroom, is the same. There's a set of rules and a set of principles. If you can adhere to those and practice those and become pretty good at those, that's someone you want to work with and someone that you want to play the game with. So I have a bunch of different analogies I use, but the first thing I do is just diffuse the misconception that this is about comedy. It can be funny, but we're not teaching people how to do improv or to be funny. We're teaching people how to follow a set of rules and principles that happen to be soft skills, that happen to be critical skills used in business, either for, you know, yourself or for your team. And that has nothing to do with being funny, but it is a misconception. And I've been asked so many times about it. I think I have maybe 100 different ways.
100 ways to say it. Earlier you mentioned storytelling. How important is that to the business owner when they're connected?
Oh, it's so important. And you'll relate to this too. I mean, when you're an entrepreneur and you're just starting out, you need to have a story about your brand and your why. And every time you get an opportunity to pitch that. So if you are, I've had so many women sign up for my classes who are starting women-owned businesses here in Atlanta. And man, they're smart. And they've got a great business plan, but they did not know how to tell their story. They did not know how to pitch themselves or their brand to people, that investors that need to, you know, the messaging needs to be right. Sometimes you only get one shot, right? Sure. I'm sure you've stood up in front of groups before where you're like, I got to talk about me. I got to talk about this business. I got to talk about my passion.
Yeah, sure. And storytelling is the difference between good and great. My go-to is, Terrence was at Georgia Tech when he was 13 years old. He took typing classes at 3 and then went on to Georgetown. So if I open up with that, that's a lot more appealing than we build apps.
Yeah.
So when it comes time to tell that, there's a story there. And
yeah,
he himself is a walking, ongoing story. It's Clarissa knows him. It's ridiculous.
Yes.
But
it's engaging.
I completely agree.
Yeah. People connect to that. So
absolutely.
I think when entrepreneurs come to me, and I'll never forget one. Do you know Roshana Novellis?
I do not.
Oh, I thought you were going to say yes. Everybody knows Roshana. She's moved to D.C., but she's an entrepreneur here who started a lot of really great women-driven initiatives for entrepreneurs. And when she took my BizProv class, she suffered, I'm not going to say from social anxiety, but she may say, yeah, it's safe to say that, but I don't want to speak too soon. But she wanted to get better at public speaking and telling the story of her brand. And by the time the class was over, she had just sort of transformed into this commercial for herself. It was so exciting to see that transformation. But I think an entrepreneur needs to be able to tell their story with confidence and own who they are, their why, their story. And that's one of the things we work on in this BizProv class. One full week, I said, was on team development. Another full week is on executive presence, public speaking, and presentation skills. Okay. And I think you said it, it's about connection. It's about having purpose to everything you say in your message, connecting a purpose to everything you say in your message. And it's so important for an entrepreneur. Okay.
Tell us a little bit more about your program. Is curriculum-based for 6 weeks or 12 weeks?
Yes. So it is a 6-week course, and this next one starts February the 12th and runs through March the 19th. So it's 6 Tuesdays after work. We start at 6 and end at 8:30. And every week we cover something pretty valuable for anyone in business. That's why I said it can run. I've had doctors take this class, lawyers take this class, entrepreneurs, business owners. The first week is active listening. The second week is failure, vulnerability, risk-taking. The third week is that team development collaboration piece. The fourth week is executive presence, confidence, and authenticity. And then the last week is adaptability and resilience. So really pivoting in the moment. Great for salespeople, like just to learn to get off script and be able to abandon their agenda and go where the client needs to go. And then the last very final class is a culmination where we take all of those principles and we combine it into a really fun group activity where they get up at the end and do a presentation that we video.
Nice.
And that we kind of use to set up for the next whatever's next for them, that they want to continue the learning or reinforce the parts that they resonated the most with them. So it's a 6-week course, and I really think having done this class now for 5 years off and on, I usually don't do the class until I have enough students signed up, because it's one of those things where the dynamic of the numbers need to be at least 6 to 8 people signing up, that we've really narrowed it down to the things that matter the most to people in business, and is more holistic to being, you know, something that could benefit you, or you, that it doesn't matter what your role is.
Sure.
So
now, do certain industries gravitate towards this? Like, is it more the marketing advertising folks? Mm-hmm. Like you mentioned, doctors, lawyers, I could see value there.
No, it. I mean, I just talked to Big Nerd Ranch the other day. I've talked to MailChimp and their marketing team. I've worked with Home Depot executives. Right now, I think in my upcoming gigs for the next couple of months, I'm working with Pandora. I'm working with a couple of other companies that are healthcare companies. Like, the people that come to me, and when I talk to anybody about marketing, it's not as much to hit a target or a title for me, like an industry or human resources or talent development. It's the problem we're solving. I am going to solve these problems. Your salespeople are not able to get off script. They are not adaptable enough to get on the phone and keep people on the phone without freezing up or getting burned out. I can help you with that. Your team could use a little bit more help on cross collaboration. busting down silos, collaborating, working together for the greater good. I can help with that. So when people call me, they typically call with that problem. Mm-hmm. Either their people need to be better at X, Y, and Z, or their team is not connected for some reason or another. That is where I go into, I can fix that. We can fix this together. I do a lot of research on the front end. Tell me about their day-to-day. Where are they hitting roadblocks? Where are the limitations?
So you're
where
really
are the barriers?
Customizing
oh,
it
yeah.
to
Everything
their
is
specific challenge.
Fully customized.
And that's Absolutely. Where your background in business plus yeah. improv really comes to play, as opposed to hiring somebody that's good at improv that doesn't understand business.
Exactly. And I mean, I also spent a year and a half for a global SaaS company called Career Builder. And I trained their enterprise sales reps and customer success. So I built a training track for their first 6 months of their time in that company. So, you know, that's where I kind of got my instructional design chops, my ability to kind of, you know, that corporate training is a lot different from, you know, the work I do today. But, you know, I think that I'm well-rounded in that I can really approach it in a way that's going to meet them where they are if they're in a corporate environment, plus, you know, sort of that more creative side, that unorthodox side of the methodology that comes with improvisation.
But at the end of the day, they're getting the outcome they desire.
Exactly. And I'm glad you asked that, because I had a long conversation with somebody on Friday about, how do you measure this? Mm-hmm. How do you show people the value? And I'm like, well, I started doing case studies a while back, and I don't do a workshop unless I record what the climate was, what the situation was before I got there, and then what did it look like after I left. And sometimes it's sales numbers, right? Sometimes it's more appointments. Sometimes it's our reps were able to keep people on the phone longer. They got more appointments the next month. Sometimes it's in the 2 days after you left, you know, we had people collaborating on projects that had never had a conversation before then. Mm-hmm. We've had more collaboration and people working together in this office than we ever have. So I usually try to do a very good job of doing case studies of the before and after. And then I'm constantly looking for better ways to record the metrics so that it's not just improv is great. You should try it. Everyone's going to have fun and feel good afterwards. I know that doesn't cut it.
Right. It's hard to have an ROI around.
So know. I've got lots of ways I'm doing that. And thank God the people that support me and work with me, they are very happy to call me afterwards and say, I want you to know what the aftermath of your work looks like. Mm-hmm. And I'm willing to tell anybody out there about it. That's a proud mama moment. So, yeah.
Very good.
So now if somebody wanted to learn more or maybe sign up for the class, what's the best way to get a hold of you?
Brave Space, spelled like Brave space. And Space, Biz, B-I-Z, and that's .com. BraveSpaceBiz.com, and you go under classes and you can see the latest courses. And then, of course, my website has all the other information on workshops, the methodology, and all the other cool things.
Now, do you have on the website some videos or some
Absolutely.
Testimonials where people can hear it from the horse's mouth?
There is a whole testimonials tab on the website,
wow.
a whole videos tab on the website. And this is pretty cool. I have to mention this because it's free.
Oh, we like free.
I know. We have a free workshop, quarterly workshop coming up 2019. The first one's in February. It is also on the website. And this is my way of saying, you want to taste it? It's like you're tasting wedding cakes. You know, people call me all the time and they're like, well, what does this look and feel like? I'm like, this is not like a wedding cake. I can't just give you a slice.
Right.
But this is my way of offering people a way to dip their toe in the water, whether it's somebody in a company who's thinking about hiring me but's not really sure of the investment, or just a business professional or a leader who's like, I just want to see if maybe I'll take a BizProf course at some point. And they're going to be free. They're 2 hours long, and that info is on my website. It's free to the public.
It's a test drive.
It's a test drive. Come have some fun. Get a few skills on. Try this on and see what it feels like.
You don't have to be funny. You can be an introvert.
No, you definitely. Okay. I'm gonna end with
it's
this.
It's introvert friendly.
The very best improvisers I know, and I can guarantee you, they're like the Tina Fey's, except I've actually worked with them. Mm-hmm. They are very introverted. They're not the person at a party telling jokes. They're really smart, analytical, left brain. You know, question everything kind of people, but they're good because they can turn everything off and just listen and be in the moment and focus. And that's what makes them good at it.
All right. Well, thank you, Joe and Christy, for sharing who you are, what you do, and why it matters, and how you find spark. And thanks for sharing with our listeners.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for listening to Spark Stories. If you're looking for more help in gaining focus, come check out our website where you can find episode show notes, browse our archives, and access free resources like worksheets, trainings, events, and more. It's all at www.shesparks.com.